From WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. The mosquito that carries malaria kills more people than any other animal. Its bite and the ensuing blood feast can leave behind lethal parasites in a human host system. We speak with Professor Chris Potter of the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine, working to understand what attracts mosquitoes to humans by studying their sense of smell.
There are certain odorants that are on our bodies that the mosquito could recognize and say, oh, this is a human, this is what I really want to feed on.
Potter's lab hopes to alter the way mosquitoes perceive human scent and flavor in an effort to make us less appealing as a meal and thus quell the diseases mosquitoes carry. It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning. I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. Happy 4th of July. Bombs bursting in air is totally celebratory, but mosquitoes buzzing in air, not so much. This morning, we're revisiting our conversation with an expert on the sometimes fatal attraction of humans for mosquitoes. One of the tiniest insects is known for having the deadliest of bites. Anopheles gambii kills more people than any other animal. Its bite and the ensuing blood feast can leave behind lethal parasites in a human host system that cause malaria. The World Health Organization reports nearly 220 million people contracted malaria in 2017, and 435,000 of them died. Another mosquito, the Aedes aegypti, can carry the diseases Zika, dengue fever, and chikungunya, which infect or kill hundreds of thousands each year. Understanding why mosquitoes are attracted to humans would be useful in quelling the diseases. Dr. Chris Potter, professor of neuroscience at the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine, is working to discover that why. By studying the insect's sense of smell, his lab hopes to alter the way mosquitoes perceive human scent and flavor, an effort to make us less appealing as a meal. We talked with Potter about his findings two summers ago to learn how his lab's research might help improve the efficacy of mosquito repellents. I asked him to explain how taste, smell, and flavor are related when it comes to mosquitoes.
So in mosquitoes, actually, mosquitoes have three noses. They have three olfactory organs. So they have the antenna, the maxillary pulp, and the labella. And the way it works is that the labella is this part that is close to where the blood feeding tube is. And on this organ, there's both smell neurons and taste neurons. And so when they're actually feeding on us, they're actually smelling us and tasting us at the same time. And so what that means, and there's a part of the brain that we discovered where both the smell neurons and the taste neurons are going to in the brain. And so what this suggests is that the mosquito, when it's tasting us and smelling us, it's actually flavoring us. Because what happens...
Flavoring us, yes.
So what that...
They're finding a flavor.
So they actually do this thing called probing. So they'll put this part of this this nose down on our skin, and they'll pat it around, and they're looking for something. And the suspicion is that they're looking for a blood vessel to find to feed on. And it's not exactly clear how they find the blood vessels, but one suggestion is that the blood vessels that are closer to the surface of our skin, they'll make the things on our skin a little bit warmer and make those odorants that are on our skin more volatile. So they're essentially able to smell these things very close to our skin. This is what we think. And that actually allows them to find a blood vessel to feed on.
So it's something that we might not smell in ourselves.
Probably not. I mean, the sense of smell in mosquitoes and a lot of insects is actually pretty good, and they can smell a lot of different odorants. So what happens is that, like, for example, in our own brains, when we smell something and we taste something, this gets combined in our brain to give a sensation of flavor. So flavor is something that exists in our brains. It's not something that exists in our tongue, for example. And it's interesting because a lot of people, when they say they go to have a delicious meal, they say this is tastes wonderful. But really, what they're really presenting on is the sense of flavor. This is a flavorful wonderful. And that is only combined, that only happens in our brains when the sense of smell and the sense of taste are combined together.
So flavor for us, good flavor, mm-hmm. is pleasurable.
Yes.
Bad flavors repel us.
Yes.
Do we think that mosquitoes experience pleasure?
Yes, yes. Well, it's hard to say, you know, to anthropomorphize it like that, but it's very possible that, you know, things that taste good to them will be pleasurable. So, for example, sugary substances in general are actually flavorable to most insects, to most animals, and so it'll taste good to them. They'll get a sense of...
And they'll do more of it.
They'll do more of it. They'll feed more. And if things are bitter, it'll taste bad to them, so they'll eat less of that.
I'm still hung up on what you said about a mosquito has three organs.
Right.
Devoted,
so three noses, essentially.
To smell. So that implies to me that evolutionarily, smell is really important to a mosquito.
Yes, smell is very important.
How so?
So they use their sense of smell to do essentially everything that's important in their life. So, for example, they use their sense of smell to find plants that they feed on. They feed on nectar, so they feed on sugar water. They also use their sense of smell to find us. So the females absolutely need a blood meal from a vertebrate host in order to get the certain proteins that are in our blood. And those proteins are used to make the eggs of for the next generation. If they don't get a protein meal, they don't get a blood meal, they actually cannot have any progeny. They cannot have eggs produced.
So that's why they bite us.
That's why they bite us. And so it's absolutely necessary for them to survive, to bite us, and to give rise to new progeny. And so they actually use their sense of smell to actually find us. We're giving off odors all the time on our skin that the mosquito can actually use and identify us. So if, like, for example, if you did this experiment where you had a human and a cow in the same room, this was actually done in the 60s, and you let these mosquitoes go free, they would go right towards us. So there's
to the human.
To the human.
Ignoring the cow.
Ignoring the cow, right. So there are certain odorants that are on our bodies that the mosquito could recognize and say, oh, this is a human. This is what I really want to feed on. And so that's, you know, something we're really interested in identifying is what are these odorants that we're giving off that gives rise to the unique sense of the humanness.
That's Johns Hopkins neuroscientist Dr. Chris Potter on The Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking in part about how humans smell and taste to mosquitoes. What exactly happens in your lab? What's the method that you use to determine whether mosquitoes have these smell and taste capabilities?
Right.
How do you know this?
So what we've done is we've actually generated new strains of mosquitoes where certain olfactory neurons, certain smell neurons essentially glow up. They glow green. So they're labeled by something called green fluorescent protein. So they're green, essentially. And so we can actually identify these neurons.
And that glowing capability is not like normal.
No, this is not normal. This is something we've generated.
It's something that
you've generated. We've made the mosquitoes.
How?
That can do this. We've done some genetic tricks with the mosquitoes. So we've made transgenic lines in mosquitoes where certain this GFP protein is expressed only in the olfactory neurons, only in the noses of the mosquito. And that allows us to see most of the olfactory neurons in the mosquito specifically. So what we can then see where these neurons are in the antenna, maxillary pulp, and the labella. And we can see where these neurons go to in the brain.
How did you discover that this works?
Well, it was like trial and error. So we have done actually a lot of this work originally in Drosophila, the vinegar fly. So we have a good, strong background of generating strains of Drosophila, this other insect that can do these very similar things. And so we took the chance that maybe we can actually adapt these things into the mosquito system. Can we bring some of these new tools and tricks that we've done in Drosophila, bring them over into the mosquito system? And we did, and it works beautifully well.
Are flies simpler? Is that why you said
flies are much simpler? They're much easier to breed. You essentially have a vial that contains a certain food in there, and you don't have to really do anything else with them. They're fine. They breed every 10 days. And so they're very easy to maintain, very easy to make transgenic lines, very easy to manipulate.
I don't know what nanotechnology is. I have this vague idea mm-hmm. that it has to do with really tiny things. Is some of these techniques you use, would they be considered nanotechnology?
They're more genetic technology. So there's this thing called CRISPR-Cas9
you
might have heard about. So that is... That's kind of revolutionizing, I think, a lot of research in that it allows you to manipulate the genome much more easily than was done before. And so that allows us to, for example, go in and mutate an olfactory gene, and then we can see how that affects their sense of smell. They should no longer, for example, be attracted to us. So we can test that directly now, whereas to do this before it would be extremely challenging. That would take maybe 5 years to do it before, and now we could probably do it in less than a year. So the genetic technologies are getting much, much better to do these more I think they're the most fun experiments, where you can start manipulating the sense of smell in the mosquito and seeing how it affects really their host-seeking behaviors, how it affects their ability to find us.
So what conclusions can you make about the mosquito from your research so far?
So far, what we identified is that there's actually this region of the brain, in this region of the brain called the subesophageal zone, that is integrating both taste and olfactory senses. So this is, we think, is the flavor center. And then we're trying to identify how the sense of smell works. So we've identified the anatomy. We know what the neurons look like. We know where they go to in the brain. And so our next step is really to start identifying how is it interpreted? How is the olfactory system detecting certain odorants, and how is it interpreting those odorants in the mosquito brain?
And why do you want to identify that?
Oh, right. Since the mosquito uses her sense of smell for essentially all the really important things, if we can actually understand how the sense of smell works, we can actually stop the mosquito from finding us, and then from biting us, and then from spreading diseases.
So you think that by understanding better how a mosquito interprets smell and responds to what it smells, what she smells, because
right.
it's only
females
that bite us, right?
That's correct.
By understanding that better, you can stop the spread of disease?
Yes, we think so, because there's two ways to do it, right? So there's one where you can actually make repellents, for example, the things that keep the mosquitoes away from us. Those actually work through their sense of smell. And we can also do the opposite, so we can actually make better attractants, things that smell better than humans to a mosquito, and we can put those somewhere else where we're not. So mosquitoes, instead of coming straight for us, they'll go towards this attractant instead. So we can really use their sense of smell to control what they're doing.
This is a good time for us to take a quick break. Dr. Chris Potter, professor of neuroscience at the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine, is with us. I'm Sheila Cast. After this short break, we'll hear how his research can affect the development and use of insecticides. I'm Sheila Cast. This is On the Record. Stay with us.
On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're revisiting our conversation with Dr. Chris Potter, professor of neuroscience at the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. Potter runs a lab called an insectary that holds 10,000 mosquitoes, many of them imported. When we talked last summer, I asked Potter to describe the focus of his research.
So our current project is actually to identify better repellents. These are something that will have a very broad range of uses. So most of the times when you identify an insect repellent that affects, for example, the species that we work on, it's called Anopheles gambi. And we find something that works against that mosquito. Very often it works against all mosquitoes. So it'll work against these ones you mentioned in the introduction, these Aedes mosquitoes that are also vectors for the Zika virus and dengue virus. And the advantage of actually identifying repellents is that we don't actually have to then release modified mosquitoes into the wild. We were essentially just identifying a chemical or an odorant that can affect how the mosquito behaves.
So the mosquito would continue to operate the way mosquitoes operate, right. But the repellent would encourage them not to do it near us.
Exactly. Correct.
But there are repellents currently, are they not working?
There are repellents. No, they do work. So DEET, for example, is one of the most effective repellents, and it was identified in the early 40s, and this is the best we've got, really, and we haven't made any better ones since then. And the reason why is that we don't really understand how repellents work. So they are effective, so definitely keep using them, but we don't actually have a really good understanding of what they are doing to the olfactory system, what they're doing to the sense of smell in the mosquito. It's something we just haven't looked at. that. And if we can really figure out what these repellents are doing to the olfactory system, then we can actually identify better repellents. We'll have a rational approach to figuring out how we can find a repellent that works even better than DEET, for example. DEET is effective, but the problems with DEET is that you have to use a pretty high concentration of DEET for it to be effective, usually about greater than 10% of DEET to be effective. It's not as volatile as you'd like it to be, meaning that it doesn't go away, doesn't go off your skin as far.
Doesn't travel
as far as you'd like it to go. You want it to travel pretty far so that the mosquito would not even come anywhere near you. So it'd be great to find something that works very effectively but has better properties than the current repellent.
And you've been working on this for several years. What are your early hunches about how repellents work in a mosquito's brain?
Right. So what we've done now is we've generated new strains of mosquitoes where we can actually see their olfactory neurons. Their neurons light up when repellents are given to them, because repellents really are just odorants. And so we can actually see how these special odorants, these repellents, actually how they are affecting the olfactory neurons. And so we've engineered them such that there's something, a modified GFP that will shine brighter. This green fluorescent protein, it's essentially that the neurons, when they're activated by an odorant, now glow brightly. You can think of them like...
An odorant is just something that's...
An odorant is just a volatile chemical, something that you can... It will go from the source, just a chemical that just smells. You can kind of think of this as like fireflies. And this is a good time to talk about fireflies, right? So if you're looking in your backyard, the fireflies are there, but you can't see them, right? But then they'll glow really brightly. And this is what we've done essentially to the olfactory neurons in the mosquito, that when we give them a puff of odorant and the neurons that respond to that odorant, they'll shine brightly. So we can actually see where they are and see and identify what's being activated. So what we've started to do is we go through all the repellents. We went to like essentially the shelves and to like supermarkets and see what are repellents that are commonly used in things that you would buy, and just isolate, buy those for the lab, and they'll start puffing these onto the mosquito and see what olfactory neurons are being activated. And so what we found is that there are some, the repellents are breaking down into different groups. There are some that seem to just stop activity of the olfactory neurons, that they don't work anymore. And there are other ones that seem to activate very specific types of olfactory neurons. And so the ones that stop activity, we think that they're working because they essentially make us invisible to the mosquito. They can't see us anymore.
And
can't smell us anymore, right? They can't smell us anymore. And the ones that are activating very specific neurons, it's essentially sending a signal to the brain of the mosquito to stay away. There's something dangerous about this. It's essentially tricking the mosquito into thinking that we're dangerous and to stay away from us. Then what we're trying to do now is identify these odorant receptors that are being activated by the repellents. Because if we can identify the odorant receptors that are being activated, then we could actually do a screen and identify other chemicals, other odorants that activate these receptors very specifically and in a manner that will make them very effective repellent.
This may be a good moment to make sure I understand. You're doing all this research mm-hmm. on the brains of mosquitoes they're very, very tiny.
They are, yes.
How do you do this?
Very carefully. So what we do is we actually have a female mosquito, and we put her on a slide, and we immobilize her so that she can't move, and we take her antenna and lay it flat on the slide. And then we puff odorants onto her antenna, and we have a microscope that's viewing the light that's given off by these neurons. And so we can actually visualize directly when we puff this odorant onto this very tiny antenna, we can actually see those neurons light up to the responses.
You're actually making me feel sympathetic toward a female mosquito. I didn't think I would ever feel that.
Don't feel sympathetic.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass, speaking with Johns Hopkins neuroscientist Chris Potter about his research on how mosquitoes use smell to find the humans they bite. I realize that smell is your thing, but is it obvious that understanding and attacking smell, the mosquito's ability to use smell, is the most effective way to get them to stop paying attention to us?
Yes, I think it is going to be the most effective way, because it is one of the sensory cues. It's one of the things that we're giving off that goes a long distance. You know, there's no other thing that the mosquito can pick up on that will work as effectively as that. So odorants, they go a long distance from our body. foot, 10 feet away. And so if you could actually target that which is essentially determined by their sense of smell, there is nothing else that would work as effectively. Mosquitoes also do pick up on temperature. So they actually like our warm bodies, and they can see us. They can detect this body temperature over other temperatures in their surroundings. And they also detect humidity. So our bodies are also moist, so they can detect that. But these cues do not radiate as far from our body as odorants do. And so if you really want to keep them away as far away as possible, the best thing to target is their sense of smell.
And mosquitoes pick up on our body heat, mm-hmm. not just because it amplifies what they smell, but separately from what they smell, they also pick up on the heat.
Right, so that they use it as an idea that there is something there. There's something warm-blooded nearby. So they use their sense of smell to identify us specifically. So they can identify us versus the cow, for example. But then, with that, their sense of smell, then they know that there's a warm-blooded animal nearby. So that helps them identify that there is a human there, and there's a humidity as well. So, and some visual information as well. So they can see. The sense of sight is not great, but they can see blobs, for example. So when they put all these together in their brains, they know, okay, this is a human. This is what I want to bite on.
You said that working on repellents seems to be a more promising way of discouraging mosquitoes than genetically modifying the mosquitoes. But are you also looking at that?
We are doing some tests in the lab to do that as well, to genetically modify them. But this is a more of a long-term project. We think that we could really make inroads looking at these repellents much more quickly, because then the idea is to identify things that are already considered safe for human use. And so there's a lot of hurdles we wouldn't have to go through in order to use them effectively against the mosquito. Genetically modified mosquitoes, that's a very interesting approach. And the technology is getting better and better, that we're getting to a point where we can actually make genetically modified mosquitoes that could be released and could essentially wipe out the population. But there's lots of, ethical questions regarding that, because once you release it, it's going to be hard to take it back. So we really have to think pretty hard about, is that the approach we want to take?
And mosquitoes are part of the food chain for
Yes.
A lot of animals eat
right.
mosquitoes.
Right.
So if you genetically modified them, you'd be affecting those food chains.
Right. And that's something we don't really have a good handle on, is about what would the long-term consequences be of essentially wiping out, a strain of mosquitoes.
Does your research also apply to mosquitoes that carry the Zika virus?
Yes, they do. So right now we're looking at Anopheles mosquitoes, but the repellents we identify are very likely to also work against the Zika-carrying mosquitoes as well, these Aedes aegypti mosquitoes, yeah. That's one of the advantage of looking at repellents specifically, is because they will have a good effect on probably a lot of different insects.
The research you do is multidisciplinary. Mm-hmm. How does that affect the way your lab functions?
So we wear lots of different hats in the lab. So we are geneticists, so we actually do lots of different crosses. So we cross different mosquito strains together. We also do a lot of microbiology. So we clone molecular biology. So we do lots of cloning. So we clone different genes to put into the mosquito. We do calcium imaging. So this is a way we can actually visualize what's going on in the mosquito's neurons when they're being activated. We do electrophysiology. So we can actually record
directly. I don't even know what electrophysiology is.
So electrophysiology is where you insert a very, very, very small needle into the hair of the mosquito's nose. And so you can actually record from the activity of that.
You are inserting a needle into the hair of a mosquito's nose.
Right. So there's these hairs on the nose. They're called sensilla. And inside those hairs are actually the neurons. And so you can actually insert a needle into this hair and record from electrical activity of the neurons themselves. And so you can actually then see, when you give them a puff of odorant, these neurons will start firing. So we do a lot of different things in the lab.
What's on the horizon? Has this research raised other questions?
Right now we're focusing on repellents, because we think that will kind of give the shortest response.
We can actually
get something to work out of this.
And let me interrupt you. to ask what you think the timeline is for that.
Yeah, so right now we're at the basic research stage. So we're really just trying to characterize how they work. So I think once we get a good handle on what they're doing, the next step is to then identify better repellents. So I think that identifying better repellents is probably about 2 to 4 years away. We're trying to do things carefully and do things properly, so it always takes extra time to do that. But we think maybe 2 to 4 years away, we can start identifying better repellents.
And I interrupted you. You were talking about other research that may grow out.
And then, we're really interested in essentially figuring out all the different sensory cues that the mosquito brings in. So olfaction is one of them. So we can also then identify how attractants work. You know, so the opposite. Right now we're looking at repellents, but we'd also think interested in looking at attractants.
Why? Why do we want to attract mosquitoes?
Well, not to us, but we could attract them to insecticide baits, for example. So if we had a bait, you know, something that would have an insecticide on it, if that is super attractive to the mosquito, then they would go towards that bait and they would feed on the insecticide, and that would actually increase the amount of killing that you do to the mosquito. And so there's essentially we're interested in using their sense of smell for keeping them away from us, but then also bringing them to things that would essentially kill them.
I really appreciate your walking us through this. So interesting. Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Dr. Chris Potter, professor of neuroscience at the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. You can find a link to Dr. Potter's research lab at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. Also there, links to pretty scary videos about how mosquitoes develop and how they bite humans. I'm Sheila Cast. All of us at On the Record wish you a meaningful and firework-filled Independence Day. Don't forget the bug repellent.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.